Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dockey, and today my guest is Sirit Sohi. She's the newest writer at SB Nation, and today we're going to talk about the Game 1s in the Conference Finals. Before we do that, though, please take a second. Just stop what you're doing, take a second. Rate, review, like us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, whatever else you're doing to listen to your podcast. Do that, that'll help us out a ton. So, you ready to tip it off? Hey Sirit, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. I am doing well, enjoying a nice, lovely day in LA. You know, it's weird with we're only down to just two series now in the playoffs, so I'm kind of like, I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, I'm feeling that a little bit too. It's with the lack of constant NBA stimulation and one of the most important stretches of the NBA season. That's always the funniest thing about the finals and the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, it's like as further along we go, I just get more and more sad. I'm like, oh no, basketball's almost over. I don't know what to do with myself.
You know, it's almost like I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, it's almost busier in July than it is in June.
It's true. Free agency in the off season has kind of taken over its own.
Yeah, it has. And there's summer league. I don't like to call it basketball, but it is, you know, by definition, it is basketball.
No, summer league to me is just a networking event. It's really more for people like me trying to break in and stock established writers like yourself to try to meet and connect with people. The games are nice, but I don't really want to be in the gym all day. Well, I mean, you know, I was trying to just be generous, but yeah, they're not really good basketball games. I've been in it. I've been part of the summer league teams. We want to lose. We don't want to make it to the playoffs. We want to get out of there as quickly as possible.
Who did you coach for?
I was with the Clippers, so I wasn't coaching. I was on the second row of the summer league team, which meant I was very low on the totem pole.
Wow.
Yeah, so but I just remember us kind of looking at each other going like, we don't want to win this game. If we win this game, we have to stay in Vegas another night. Meanwhile, I had two coaches had their bags in my car and were like, as soon as this game's over, we're getting in the car and we're driving home.
Yeah, Vegas for that long is just impossible. You know, nobody should ever be in Vegas for more than three nights. And then in summer league, there are people, I don't do the whole thing, but like I'll be there for a week. And it is the most delirious, numbing, weird. It's just not a place that should really exist. it's just not like a human place. Like there's nothing about it that suggests that people should live there.
No, and the thing about it too, it's like I did it last year for 10 days for summer league, and this is on my own, no team or anything like that, and. By like day four, I was just like, "Can I change my flight? Like, can I go home now?" It's too much.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But we're going to be able to talk about summer league in a few weeks. Let's talk about the conference finals. Which series do you want to start with?
Let's go with the game that just happened last night. Warriors Houston. Just in the interest of recency bias.
Perfect. Well, the long way. I mean, we waited all year for this. I mean. Even longer, yeah. Basically, since they got CP, everybody's been waiting for this matchup, and it's been great that they're both healthy, but the Warriors came out, it was close in the first half, and then they did what they did. They pull away in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. What were your takeaways from the game?
Yeah, I think, as you know, you're saying that they pulled away, they definitely did, and they went on one of those runs that they've become accustomed to going on. I tweeted out Baxter Holmes from ESPN. He had an article about the most dangerous 3 minutes in the NBA, and it's about the Warriors' runs and how the first timeout doesn't even do anything, and there's very little that you can do to stop the barge, and they know about it. Like, their thing is, like, let's get three stops and three scores, and we're good. Because, like, we can get... Their philosophy is basically, like, on any miss, we can get a three-pointer.
Right.
So three misses, we can get three three-pointers, and like we can really build a cushion there, and that's kind of what you saw. That's exactly what you saw happen. But at the same time, the thing that's encouraging me about this, at least being a series, I think the Warriors are gonna win it because I think they're just too good essentially. But the Rockets didn't really cede to them. Like, a lot of the times the Warriors go on a run like that, and it's demoralizing, but the Rockets kind of just continued to play their game, probably up until, like, later in the fourth quarter, where I think things stagnated so much they weren't really hunting switches enough, which I think really hurt them, and that's something that they did a really good job of in the first half. They, for the most part, though, they really, like, they kept it going. They didn't really seem too fazed about the fact that the Warriors were making a run. They didn't have that seeping frustration and almost helplessness that you see out of teams. So that's kind of encouraging. But, you know, that's pretty much just a silver lining from a game one loss at home.
Yeah, for me, I'm kind of a little bit opposite of you on the hunting of switches. I think that's what hurt them offensively. I think I actually just did put out a video before we jumped on the call. The Rockets were playing so deep into the shot clock, which is kind of absurd, because, like, they had, the frequency was 21% of their possessions or shots were in the last 4 seconds of the shot clock. And a lot of it was because they kept trying to hunt and find Curry constantly in the yeah. second half. And like, for me, like, the Rockets are at their best when they get Harden and Paul on the move, in terms of they get off the ball, they come back, they set a screen, they come off of a DHO and attack and rolling and things like that. When it's so stagnant like the way it was, it has, like, man, that just plays into the Warriors' hands to me. I feel like that's kind of like, if you get these guys moving, it's a different story. And that was the big thing for me.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think one of the things I've been thinking about is the fact that if the Warriors have any real weaknesses, it's that they're kind of whimsical and they're prone to making mistakes. And I think that the way that Houston plays just makes it easier on the Warriors defensively, just as far as their execution goes. And they already execute really well, but it doesn't really leave too much room for the random ephemera that you can kind of sometimes beat the Warriors on. It doesn't really make them, it doesn't really wear them down, I think. I think there's like, benefits to that, in it. Not benefits necessarily, but the flip side of that is, I think that throughout the series, Houston's going to be able to legitimately get guys in foul trouble, and I think that's going to help them win some games. But yeah, like, there's definitely, there's an extent to which maybe it is playing in their hands, and I think it really illustrates the differences focus-wise between these teams, because it usually took, like, it took fighting, and it would take, like, two or three screens to really, really get Harden onto Curry in a place where, like, nobody's able to make that quick adjustment and go back on them. And with the Warriors, it was kind of like, all right, bang, bang, like, we got our matchup right away.
Right.
And it would usually be, like, KD over Harden or Chris Paul, who's, you know, is fine as a point guard when it comes to mismatches, but this is Kevin Durant that we're talking about here.
Yeah, KD's just, I mean, it's the height disparity is just kind of crazy. You know,
and I think KD's one of those guys who, like, just when he has a height advantage, which is pretty much always, he knows that. Like, not every player knows that they have a height advantage. He completely understands it, and, like, he approaches possessions as though you have no ability to contest him. And I think he did that with pretty much everybody except for PJ Tucker.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought the best guy they actually had guarding him was Ariza. I thought Ariza probably did the best on him. But they got
to
get,
I really like Capella, too.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of it with Capella and where I'm at, just kind of see where he's at with that kind of matchup. But a great challenge for Capella too, if he's going to grow into that kind of player. Like, that's a hell of a young guy to have down the road, if he can be that forceful on the offensive end with his roles and things like that, and then able to guard a guy like KD. That's really a great weapon for the Rockets. The other thing, they need to get more from their wings, man. Like, you know, Ariza was 3 for 8. Like, he was all right, but PJ Tucker 0 for 3. You know, Luke Mbah-Amute was terrible, and I don't know how much of it is his shoulder still bothering him or whatnot, but they got it. I mean, there was all this talk about getting these wings and getting these guys and really help them, and it just kind of, game one, they just sort of put up a dud.
think the Warriors kind of just decided we believe in our coverage. We're gonna just let you score in pick and roll, or if you want to throw a lob, it's gonna be incredibly tight. And Harden can do that. He's an incredible passer, and Chris can do that too, but I think it clearly wore them down around the end, and I think a lot of those, I mean, they had a couple critical ones that, like Harden trying to throw a lob that turned into a turnover or a missed layup, just because things were so tight down there with the Warriors' height. And they also didn't seem to have too much of a problem selling out and, like, closing hard and occasionally even, like, getting pump-faked out of a play, because then that forces other people to make. Like, if you can get into a position where now it's, you know, Mbah Mute or Gerald Green making a decision instead of Chris Paul or James Harden, you know, that's obviously a win.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing, too, was Draymond, despite only having 5 points, was really great last night. 9 assists, 9 rebounds, did a good job boxing out on Capella. I know there's a stat floating around. I think it's 18 box outs on Capella alone. And it's, I'm like, that's the dirty work you need from a guy like Green. When you look at it from the Warriors end of it, you know, what do you think you're going to see in game two? Is it just more of the same? Hey, let's just keep rolling it out and keep doing what we're doing. Or, you know, the Hampton Five started, but kind of struggled in the first 2 minutes, it really felt like. They calmed down eventually, and Iguodala picked up 2 quick fouls. I thought Looney came in and had a pretty good effect on calming everybody down, which is sort of weird to say that Kevon Looney had that effect.
Yeah, I think you might see a little bit more of Looney, because I think, first of all, anytime Kerr can go to him, inexplicably, he just will.
So, right.
You know, legitimate reason to. I think we're definitely going to see a little bit more of him. I think, if anything, I think they're going to be a little bit more. I think, like, you know, it was clearly something that they had talked about, because they all kind of had their hands back. I mean, those two. But I think throughout the game, there were moments where they just lost their discipline as far as fouling goes. I think they're probably, if there's anything that they're gonna work on, it's probably going to be that. But I don't know. Like, I think. They were largely successful in almost everything they wanted to do. It's tough to figure out what you should do with a team like the Rockets as far as defensively, because I think a lot of people were talking about how, oh, the Rockets did so many bad for them. You know, I think to an extent that's true, and that I think the Warriors will probably win the series, but that's what the Rockets do. So it's not too much of a concern. In some ways, they cut the game.
Right, and then let me ask you this question: and then we can move on to the next series and so on. But the effect, though, for all year, all the Rockets have been talking about is we're going to beat the Warriors. We're locked in. This is our team. You know, Daryl Morey's coming out and making comments. I think about the Warriors all the time and whatnot. I mean, they've built up all the way to this game one, and to come out and just sort of lose. I mean, once they kind of built that lead in the third quarter, and there were times where the Rockets would make it interesting and it'd be a 4 or 5 point lead. It never really felt like they were threatening. Do you think there's a psychological sort of edge or block? I mean, you're kind of the expert being up in Toronto. So do you think this sort of a psychological sort of like, damn, we blew this?
Ooh, I don't know. It's definitely possible, especially given the work I've done to them in the past. But there's also, like, you know, I think they'll probably find a way to squeeze out game two just by making little adjustments, which I think we saw them do in the Utah series. Like, they could just, I don't think they missed nearly enough screens.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think they can do that. That's an adjustment that they made in the Utah series. And the fact that they had to do it then kind of surprised me that they didn't do it in game then. But that's, you know, that's something that D'Antoni's never been the best in-game adjustment coach, and that might go on and hurt them. That could have been one of those scenarios. And the other thing is just, like, Nene can't be in the series. He just can't.
Would you rather, like, Nene or Ryan Anderson?
Well, unless there's a fifth, yeah, Yeah, I guess. But, like, unless there's a fifth, like, just, they should stagger his minutes a little bit more to for when there's a fifth big man. But even when they do that, it's, he just ends up being on Durant, and it's, well, just can't do it. They might just have to tighten their rotation there.
Right.
And just kind of stick as much to, like, at least either you're playing small ball or you're playing with Capella. Like, Nene's minutes just, they just exist. They definitely can't exist in critical moments.
No, no.
I'm just trying to maybe get him over with in, like, the back end of the second quarter or something like that where you can make up for it later.
Just try to get by a minute or two of rest for Capella or somebody and in that situation. You're right, though. If he's playing, and he didn't play much. He only played about 6 minutes, but it wasn't a good 6 minutes, although he was a plus
one. It wasn't, and it made a difference. It definitely made a difference. Like, he just got killed by Katie, and I understand. Everybody.
Yeah, and the one thing we know about D'Antoni is he will shorten his rotation.
Yeah.
that's
the reason that you have the whole regular season to not do that.
Right. Right, and now we'll see what they do in game two. Before we get on to the Eastern Conference, let me tell you about my friends at Brand Active Media. They are if you have a corporate event coming up, they are your go-to people. You guys, weddings, whatever, you know, the photo booth action with the props and all that stuff, they do it. They make awesome, awesome trading cards, sort of like if you have a kids at AYSO, bring these guys out here. They'll make trading cards for your entire team. They've been at the NFL Draft, the Pro Bowl. They were at NBA All-Star Weekend. This is a great, great group, Brand Active Media. And if you let them know that Mo from the Jump Ball sent you, all your printing is free. All your printing is free if you let them know that I sent you. So brandactivemedia.com, check them out. If you got a corporate event or a private party coming up, I highly look into it. They make every party a bit more fun. All right, let's go to the Eastern Conference because that was quite a whooping the Celtics put on the Cavs.
Yes. Yeah, that was, as somebody who's in Toronto, that was just like, it was basically like a 5-0 sweep. Completely dominate the Cavs after they looked unbeatable against the Raptors, who really, you know, it was supposed to be their year. So that was that was a little bit disheartening. And also, it starts to make you justify some of the decisions the Raptors make. I know a lot of people are upset about Dwayne Casey being fired. I don't particularly think he should have been fired just because I don't really know where that goes. They really capped out their talent, and that's, they could have done better. They could have not put CJ Miles on Kevin Love, for instance, but right. They were, you know, that's what they are at this point. But you could justify it more after watching that game.
Yeah, that one hurt the Raptors. That was one of my first thoughts. I was like, oh man, Raptors fans got a rough. This was not the result they were looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I think Raptors fans were hoping the Cavs at least dominate, so I could kind of be like, okay, well, the Raptors got swept, but at least they got swept by the team that's going to definitely go to the finals. Now that's, you can kind of question that a little bit.
Yeah, now you're just kind of like, oh, that hurt a bit. But the other thing, too, the big difference when you watched that game and any games of the Raptors series was that the Celtics were way more physical. You know, they and they have big, brooding guys, you know. You know, Morris is a guy that's going to get physical with you. Obviously, Horford, Baines, that's his job. Like, it's in his contract. You have to get physical with guys, otherwise we won't pay you. I actually have seen the contract. That is literally in it. You know, so it's they have those guys and that stuff. And I think that was just such a big difference. And the other thing, too, was LeBron was so passive to start that game. Like, that's the thing. Whenever LeBron starts a game passive like that, I just immediately worry for the Cavs.
Yeah, you know, part of me is like, was he passive because he was passive, or was that kind of brought on by the Celtics defense? And I'm assuming a lot of it was more him, but he wasn't really able to find head of steam when he needed it later. And I think you can credit his inability to eventually get there to them. But yeah, I think we're going to see very different LeBron game two tonight.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's gonna be enough. at least at home. And I like they're obviously gonna eventually have to win a game at the Garden. I don't know if it'll be this one. Maybe it will, but there were a lot of things that went wrong that I don't really know that LeBron being better will fix a lot of them. It's one of those things where I keep going back and forth. I keep thinking about, okay, if the Cavs can figure out a way to execute on offense, and all of a sudden the Celtics baskets and their ability to score on offense it becomes a lot harder, and then the series just kind of flips in that sense, because really all Boston's done is win a game at home.
Right.
It was just the manner in which they did it was very convincing. I look at the gaps that LeBron would have to find to be able to beat them in game two, and I think it's tough because, I mean, they're just so fast with their rotations, and it's not just a matter of LeBron being quick then, because they can kind of solve that. It's more so the second guy. And I think as long as maybe if that guy's Kevin Love or Kyle Korver, where they're a shooting threat that also can like rifle these passes at a very, very quick and accurate rate. Like, I think that's probably an avenue for them to get easier buckets. So hopefully we see that. But once those passes go into other guys' hands, like once it's Jeff Green or J.R. Smith, they become get rattled by the defense. They don't make the right decisions. There isn't a long two in the world that J.R. wouldn't shoot against the Celtics team, I think so. I'm really interested in seeing how they adjust. I'm just interested in seeing if we see a lot more of Thompson, especially early. So it'll be, I don't know, I feel like I have a strong feel on this series after watching that game, but I also feel like I have zero feel on it. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting paradigm because you don't know. I mean, listen, the Celtics are like the little engine that could. They just keep winning games. They just keep, every time you doubt them, they just sort of keep winning games.
Yeah. And it's very hard to evaluate a team like that.
Yeah, and we're all kind of just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Mm-hmm. That may never drop. Who knows? The thing about, you're talking about, you know, James early on, I thought the game plan early on was, or it felt like, was we got to get Love going right away. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just an automatic mistake, and to me it's like you got to get your best player going first, and then it opens things up for everybody else. And I think the other thing that really kind of continued LeBron being more passive was very early in the game, Korver missed two threes that were pretty open that he normally knocks down. There were late contests, but he knocks those down. JR missed an open long two, as you said, he there is no long two he'll pass up on, but he missed an open one there. Like, they had a couple of shots early in the game that I think if they go down, I think you get a little more juice. I mean, they only made four threes, and that's pretty obscene. Like, I don't see that happening again.
Yeah, the shots will just start dropping. That will make a difference for sure.
Yeah, that will help. But at the same time, too. Mm-hmm. As the game went on, the Celtics defense just got tighter and tighter, and the Cavs defense just got looser and looser. It was really amazing to see.
Yeah, and I think the Celtics defense kind of rattled them. Like, you talk about these open shots, and they were there, but I don't know, like, especially Love. Like, I just felt like there were moments where he was almost short-arming things and doubting himself and not really, like, they were really in their heads. That's kind of what the Celtics defense has gotten very good at doing. They allowed a lot of uncontested shots, but I think an uncontested shot against a team like the Celtics is very different from an uncontested shot against a team like the Raptors. Right? You know what? Let's forget about the Raptors. All the series an anomaly, even the Pacers.
Right.
Like, if you look at, like, I can't remember which game it was now, but it was one of the games where LeBron got kind of a late start, but ended up having a very dominant game. The Cavs pretty much dedicated the first 5 minutes of the game, this was against the Pacers, mm-hmm. trying to get Love going. And they couldn't. And LeBron was kind of able to toggle back into dominant mode right away. And I think that's what, and the Pacers played pretty good defense on them. They had guys that could at least impede him a little bit, but that wasn't really a problem for him. And I think with the Celtics, that is definitely a bigger problem, just the ability to toggle back and forth between what you're doing, because they make every single decision so hard. Like, there were some clear swing passes the Cavs could have made that just, you know, they were afraid of deflections, or they were just like, I think there was one where, like, I think Love had caught it on a double from LeBron, and Korver was open, or it could have been vice versa. And Jaylen Brown was just on that side of him. And, like, there was just no way that Love was going to make that pass. He just wasn't even looking at it. He swung it to the other side where, in the corner, I can't remember who had it now, but it was a contested shot, or it didn't even end up going up because, like, the guy was covered. And there were moments like that. There were moments that I think, some of LeBron's passes were impeded or deflected. They're just a completely different proposition than any of the other teams that that the Cavs have faced right now.
Yeah, and the Celtics, just like you said, defensively, they do kind of rattle teams. Like, that's a good way of putting it. You should think about writing, by the way. You might have a future in that. But they do. They rattle teams. They really kind of get that going. They have such long arms. Like, the length of the Celtics team is pretty impressive. They're not Milwaukee long, but they're a smarter basketball team in that sense of they know how to use their length. And just even the switches, it was funny. There are two clips that I put up on my site that it's, you know, the Cavs have, a situation where they're fronting on, I think it's Marcus Morris. They have George Hill fronting on Marcus Morris and no help on the backside. And, you know, it turns into a Morris dunk, where almost the same exact action happens on the other end of the court, and it's Rozier on Love. And this time Tatum comes in on the backside and takes Love when the ball gets there and forces that turnover. And it's just like such drastically the same play, but defended so differently that it's like, you're just like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And that's what the Celtics defense does, because I don't think Love even saw Tatum coming. You know, he thought he had the Rozier on him. He's like, perfect. I'm going to get a layup out of this. He catches and turns, and it's like, you get that reaction when you turn around and you see somebody you weren't expecting. You're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what happened. And Tatum got him for a steal. And you have to give the Celtics credit defensively. They were really locked in from the beginning of the game.
Yeah, they were, and that's the kind of play that makes you look over your shoulders for the rest of the game.
Right. Are they hunting me? Are they following me? Am I being stalked?
Mm-hmm.
The thing I think, and you said this earlier, and I think you're right. I think we're going to see Thompson start game two.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think it has to happen right away.
I mean, he was the only guy, like, he rebounded really well before he came in the game. I remember texting my friends on a group chat. And I think I was like, wow, the rebound discrepancy early in the game was 12-3 in Boston's favor. And then when Thompson comes in, I look later and it's like 18-15. And I'm like, wow, he makes a difference.
Yeah, and some of those rebounds were just like, come on, like, get in the play.
Yeah, it's literally right in front of you.
Yeah, like there were some that just like bounced, like, to the free throw line, to like Horford or Jaylen or somebody, and it was just like, guys, this is the Eastern Conference Finals. What is going on?
Right. I thought we were over this effort thing. I didn't know we were gonna do this again.
You just finished a sweep. Come on.
We're not gonna bring that up anymore. So that's it. Oh, right. We're not gonna talk about that. We're not gonna talk about that. We're gonna let them relax for a bit. Let me ask you this question: between the Rockets and the Cavs, they're both down 0-1. Who are you more concerned for?
I'm more concerned for the Rockets because, I mean, I just think they're going to lose.
Right. So game one of the Celtics-Cavs series hasn't really changed your mind. You feel like the Cavs are going to win it?
No, I think You know, I think it definitely changed my mind about the likelihood of the Celtics winning the series. I think they just did some things that the Cavs are going to have a lot of problems with. Especially, we haven't even talked about the Celtics' offense. Like,
yeah.
It's just, with the way that the Celtics execute, like, using the whole entire shot clock against a team like the Cavs, who don't have the smartest or best or most agile defenders, like, that's going to be a problem for them all series, because the Celtics aren't a team that really lets up. Like, they'll continue to do that. They play the right way for pretty much the entire game. Like, that's gonna be an issue. And I think Tristan in the game will help mitigate that to an extent. But even he was getting caught on stuff that, you know, I think maybe if he had better defenders around him, he wouldn't. But it wasn't like he can come in and change everything. I think he obviously helped, but not enough. Again, it's so hard to take anything analytical out of a blowout.
Right.
Other than that, you know, don't get blown out again. But yeah, like I think they're kind of just two different series in my eyes, because one of them actually the result is a lot less preordained.
Yeah, I could see that. And the other thing too about the Celtics offense and the Celtics in general, they don't go away. We saw it in the Philly series. You know, it doesn't matter how much they're down. They're just going to keep playing. We're going to get a wire timeout where it's going to be Brad Stevens saying, like, come on, guys. Hey, just one step at a time. We're going to get a stop, and then we got to score. Like, it's going to be something just, you know, one at a time, one at a time, one play at a time. We're going to get that. And they, to his credit, they have completely bought into that thought. And that's how you come back from big deficits in games and things like that. And that makes a huge difference. And he doesn't freak out on the sidelines. He does a good job in that sense. Offensively, I mean, they're rolling. I mean, they get the ball flying every which way. And they just make the right pass. It's actually kind of annoying, because in the same way the Spurs were annoying, in that they always make the right play.
Yeah, a lot of the Spurs.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. And it's hard to count them out, but I still, at the end of the day, I just go like, I don't know, man. LeBron can just go for 45 and get a win tonight. Like, LeBron can go 45, 15, and 12 and get the win. Like, I don't know. It's I just never want to bet against that guy.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I still think the Cavs are going to win this series for the one reason that you stated. But it's still, you know, he's going to have to face a lot more attrition than he's faced in a long time. Probably more attrition than he'll face in the finals, to be honest.
Yeah.
Obviously, whoever comes out of that series is going to be able to score a lot more than the Celtics. But as far as, you know, a team that's tailor made to defend him, like, could you come up with better guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. The one thing I find funny though is, like, I felt like he rested a lot in Game One. I feel like he should be fresh for Game Two. I just think he should be fresh for Game Two a little more.
It was one of those games where I felt like the whole team kind of, as soon as they were down, it was like, okay, well, we're kind of old, and do we really want
to
use all this energy and maybe just end up losing a close game, or we're just going to come back and run it back for Game Two.
Right, like, if you get them down early, they might quit, so... You know, maybe not in Game Two. Maybe there's going to be more urgency now. For me, I think I'm more concerned about the Rockets. I didn't have the Rockets winning the series, so, you know, and But I didn't feel good about Game One, though. I didn't feel good about the way they ran their offense. I didn't. I mean, they definitely had defensive mishaps all game. In that regards, but it's just like, for me, I just don't feel. They didn't fill me with any sort of confidence of, like, they can make this a really, really interesting series. I still don't think. Mm-hmm. I still think it goes six games, but I don't think it'll be that an interesting six games.
You know, I think offensively, they're just gonna figure it out. Like, they'll just go look at the tape, and they'll obviously the Warriors will adjust too. And I think that'll be an interesting thing throughout the series. But defensively is kind of what the problem is. Like, first of all, Klay Thompson is the best spot up shooter of all time. Can we?
Yes.
Can we not leave him open?
I don't care who you're helping off of. You're not helping off of him.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the one that sticks out in everybody's mind is the one in the fourth quarter where they just got the ball back after a stop, and they kind of, like, everything was a little bit scrambled. But the thing that left Clay open was Tucker and Capella, who are two of their best defenders.
Right.
Both following Draymond Green on a cut.
Yeah. Let Draymond score.
Capella's doing his job. I think Capella, it was mostly on Tucker. Like, he just shouldn't have been following him. He should have known where Clay was. But, I mean, that was just, you know, staggering oversight there. And I think there were a lot of other moments. Transition especially. Their defense just needs to be so much better. They get lost on way too many cross matches. A lot of them are, you know, sometimes you get stuck in a cross match, but a lot of them can be mitigated.
Yeah.
It just makes it way too easy on them. You have to be glued on them in transition. And I understand that, you know, no team has found a lot of success doing it, but they were worse than I thought they would be.
Yeah, and you have to have Clay awareness, like you said. The funny thing about the play you described, Jared Dubin has a video up on somewhere on Twitter, you know, Twitter.com, that amazing app. I watched that exact play. And what's funny is Tucker literally is telling Capella, "You take Clay," and then he starts drifting towards Clay. Then Draymond cuts, and then they both go to Draymond, and I was just like, wow.
It's also like, as PJ Tucker, what are you doing telling Capella to take Clay instead of Draymond?
I mean, it was transition, I thought, too. I was like, wow, you should probably just be like, hey.
Was closer to him, I think.
Yeah, the whole thing was weird, and I just remember just laughing at the clip when I saw it on Dubin's account, and I was just like, yeah. I go, it's the blind leading the blind right there. Like,
yeah.
It's quite disappointing in that regard.
And that's the stuff they can solve. Like, the other problem, like, the reason that I think the Warriors are just going to end up winning this series. Kevin Durant can get any shot he wants at any time, yeah. And it's going to be a good shot. Like, that is, like, it bore itself out in game one, and I don't know what they can do about that.
Yeah.
Unless they stop switching, but that just changes everything about their coverage.
Yeah. The other question I have that kind of relates to the other series, I found it interesting in after the Eastern Conference Finals. I kind of just thought to myself and said, man, I know the Cavs I'm confident the Cavs will make it to the finals. A week ago, I would have said I know, but now I'm just saying confident to give myself a little more leeway. But I feel like the Celtics would make a more interesting finals matchup for either of these teams. I don't think the Celtics would win the finals against either of these teams, but I think they could make for a more interesting finals. What do you think?
They could beat Houston.
You think they could beat Houston?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There again, another team. Like, would you want a better group of people defending two isolating players one on one?
I mean, I'd want the Warriors, but after that, I think I'd go
on
with
defense,
Celtics.
Though? Like, I don't know, because it's not like the Warriors are actually filled to the brim with a lot of good. Like, they have, no, don't get me wrong, they have a lot of good one on one defenders, but I mean, I think for a guy like Harden, I would much rather have Jaylen Brown.
I could see that, and I just think I like the way Iguodala, who didn't give a damn about the regular season, all like, why even show up for the regular season if you're gonna do that, and then just flip the switch for the playoffs? Like, just go sit on the beach for a few months. Like, just go relax. But you know, I think I like the way Iguodala defends these guys and
yeah,
switches.
I think he's gonna have a more inconsistent series than
what
he put up.
We'll definitely see that. But I think I do think the Celtics would make a more interesting finals matchup for either of those teams. You know, they played the Warriors tough. Mm-hmm. You know, they beat the Rockets in Boston in that really absurd game where James Harden had a meltdown in like two charges in the final minute.
Oh yeah,
kind of game. So that's you know, I think they definitely could make it a very more interesting finals. I just, again, I'm still confident Cleveland will get there, but maybe check with me after tonight's game and not so much.
This one, Marcus Smart Finals MVP is going to be hilarious.
Oh God, it's going to be on the level of like the Andre Iguodala MVP, where it's like his points really aren't going to be there, but his plus minus is just freaking amazing. We have to give it to him. Hurts.
I'm still fine with Iggy winning that MVP.
Oh no, he deserved it 100%. You know, the only other person who deserved it more was probably LeBron.
Yeah, I think like that. that's the argument. I think as we get more and more removed from that finals, the notion becomes like, you know, why didn't Curry win that MVP? We were all prisoners of the moment there. I was like, no.
Nope.
Like, Iggy shifted that series.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
He completely changed the tenor of the series, and Steph wasn't very good at the start of it, so.
No, 100%. It's just people want to just, they want their stars to have the, you know, the finals right. MVP.
Now that Curry doesn't have a finals MVP, it feels wrong. But in the context of both of those championships, you can see why he didn't get it. That's, you know, there's no slight on Curry there. It's just kind of what ended up happening.
Yeah, we use the hardware as our judgment of these right. guys, right? How many finals MVPs did you have? How many MVP? It's just kind of like, guys, like, He has the hardware that matters. He has the ring.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the most important thing. I will say this. I think if LeBron turns it around tonight, I think it's because he had a secret weapon, and it's gelato. Okay? I can't confirm it, but I've heard a rumor that special gelato was shipped to him from Los Angeles, from the best gelato place in all the land.
H Gelato H,
exactly. Oh my god, how has that been staring in front of me for so long and I never picked damn it, I'm stealing that, sir, and I'm not giving you any credit for that one. That's perfect. He's got some H Gelato H from my favorite place, Uli's Gelateria. They have two locations in LA, one in downtown Los Angeles in the Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street on Spring, and the other one on 3rd and Beverly in the mid-city area of Los Angeles. I'm telling you, you can't go wrong. Amazing flavors. They do a great job of seasonal flavors. Right now, they have a passion fruit flavor that's to die for. So highly recommend. Check them out. Great people. Lovely people. Check them out. Uli's Gelateria. Sir, tonight's one of my favorite nights because it's draft lottery night. I don't know much about the draft itself, like in terms of prospects or anything like that, but I enjoy draft lottery just because I kind of like, and this is maybe I'm a bit sadistic, I kind of like seeing the disappointment of the guys who don't win the lottery. what is an outcome that would make you super excited for the draft lottery tonight?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to me is I don't want the Celtics to get the Lakers pick.
Right.
They have enough picks. Just share the wealth a little bit. Because then they kind of like, it also turns next year's draft into high noon as well.
Right.
And they're going to be unlikely to get it then. So.
They're more likely to get it then.
Oh, they are.
They are more likely. Sorry, I didn't explain it well before we got on the pod. They have basically 2 through 14. If that Sacramento pick falls into 2 through 14 next year, they get it. If it's the number one pick, it goes to Philly.
Oh, I see. Okay, this is honestly one of the most complicated. This Philly Lakers Boston thing is honestly like just incredibly complicated.
I'm over draft protections. I'm over these things. If you want to trade your draft pick, you have to just be willing to trade the draft pick. No more protections.
The whole entire thing.
Yeah, the NBA has to just, I really think the NBA needs to get rid of this draft protection stuff. And it's like, hey, you want to trade the pick? You trade the pick. That's it. But I'm with you on Boston. My favorite outcome for the next two draft lotteries is Boston doesn't win either pick. I think it would be comical.
That would be pretty funny. Like Sacramento gets the number one and then...
And that conveys to Philly. And that's just kind of like one of those situations. And then for what they, and then for all the touting of they got Tatum and all of that, they got the whole time it was Tatum and the pick. This is going to be great. And then if the pick turns into like a couple of second rounders, which no doubt Danny will turn into like two Serbians who are freaking phenomenal. But it's, you know, I would find that the more pleasing outcome for me. I'd like
the worst part about that is that Boston would still probably win the trade.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I mean that's a tough. They got a great one in Tatum, and we don't know what Fultz is going to look like, but
yeah,
it's hard.
I'm sure Fultz looks fine in the minutes that he's played, but we like Jason Tatum is something.
I mean, Jason Tatum's been the rookie of the playoffs.
Yeah.
In my opinion, like if you just did a Rookie of the Year award for playoff guys, he'd be that guy. He's been better than Simmons. He's been better than Mitchell. I really think he's been
taken kind of a leap.
Yeah.
Yeah. What he's playing, I feel like maybe if he was a little bit more unhinged in the regular season, not playing for the Celtics, he might have been right up there in the Rookie of the Year race.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. The one other draft lottery thing outcome I'm kind of hoping for, just because I think it would make for the summer even more interesting, is I want the Cavs to get the number one pick.
Oh, wow.
I want this to put...
That's highly unlikely, right?
Yeah, I mean, right now it's slated at the eighth pick, I believe. The Nets pick will go to eighth, which will go... Doesn't matter where it falls, it goes to Cleveland no matter what. But if it does happen, I kind of think it would be a lot of fun to kind of go like, God, just first off, the whole month after this would be, what do they do with that pick? Do they trade the pick? Who do they take? What happens with LeBron James's free agency? It's just
mm-hmm. Oh my God.
I mean, it's kind of a headache, but it would be kind of a lot of fun at the same time.
It would be.
Yeah. You know, so
it totally would be.
That is my preferred outcome for the draft lottery tonight is that scenario. Sierra, you have some great news. I don't know how many people know, but you are officially a full-time writer at SB Nation. So that is fantastic. When do you start writing for them?
On June 4th.
On June 4th.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Listen, SB Nation stole a good one. Okay? SB Nation was smart, and they got a great writer in you. It was going to have, somebody was scooping you up soon. So congratulations on that stuff. Plug your stuff where they can find you on Twitter and whatever else you got going.
Yeah, you can follow me at Damien Triller on account of the timing of me starting at SB Nation. I am probably not going to have too much going up for a little while here. Maybe some stuff on the Celtics defense, maybe not. It's going to be... You know, it's going to be a little bit touch and go, but if anybody would like to go back and relive the Raptors-Cavs series from the Raptors' perspective, you can definitely go find that.
Yeah, you wrote a great piece on it. I know I retweeted it at the end of it, you know, kind of just breaking it all down. I thought it was awesome.
Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Sierra. I look forward to your writings on SB Nation and, you know, appreciate you coming on.
All right, thanks for having me.
That's it for our show. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on Google Play, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Have yourselves a great one.